Hi, welcome back to Joe Blogs. This video is the next in a series looking at the financial implications of Russia's invasion of Ukraine on the global economy. And in today's episode, I want to talk about the United Nations and Syria. It's just been announced that aid that was previously being provided by the United Nations directly to war-torn Syria has been blocked by Russia. So at a recent council meeting, the 15 members of the United Nations Security Council had to pass a vote to continue providing this aid for another 12 months. All of the members voted in favour of the motion apart from Russia. And because the United Nations Security Council is structured as a unanimous vote system, it needs everybody to say yes. So Russia, by having the power of veto, has completely scuppered this deal. So that means that the aid package into Syria will no longer continue. And this throws up a really interesting question right now as to whether or not Russia should be allowed to continue in its capacity in the United Nations. So in this video, we'll walk through exactly what the United Nations is, we'll have a look at who the members are, and then I'll quickly go through what the situation in Syria is and what the implications of this veto are for the situation. And then finally today, I'll wrap up with my summary. So what I think the overall implications of Russia's involvement in a variety of world councils is at the moment, and whether or not this is sustainable going forward. So before we get started, if I could ask you to give me a thumbs up at some point during this video if you're enjoying the content, and also to subscribe. Don't forget I always include chapters, and if you'd like to support the channel, please have a look below where you'll find links to Buy Me a Coffee, Patreon and YouTube Super Thanks and membership. The United Nations was established in 1945 at the end of World War II, with four main purposes: to maintain international peace and security, to develop friendly relations among nations, to cooperate in solving international problems and in promoting respect for human rights, and to be a centre for harmonising the actions of nations. The United Nations Security Council is composed of 15 members. There are five permanent members, which are China, France, Russia, United Kingdom and United States, and 10 non-permanent members elected for two-year terms by the General Assembly. And currently the 10 non-permanent members are Albania, Brazil, Gabon, Ghana, India, Ireland, Kenya, Mexico, Norway and the UAE. And the Council of 15 members votes on all of the key issues for the United Nations. Russia has signalled the end to a long-running United Nations aid operation into northwest Syria from Turkey after vetoing a one-year extension and then failing with its own proposal for a six-month renewal and greater international reconstruction efforts. The existing mandate for United Nations humanitarian aid, including food, medicine and shelter, to over 4 million people in opposition-controlled northwest Syria from Turkey, has now expired. Russia's United Nations ambassador said that the only proposal that Russia would support was their own. The United States, Britain and France all voted against the Russian proposal, whilst the remaining members of the council abstained. Before the Russian proposal failed, Russia had vetoed a proposal for a one-year extension, which had been drafted by Ireland and Norway, and received 13 votes in favour, with China deciding to abstain on the vote. The US ambassador to the United Nations was quoted as saying, "This is a life and death issue, and tragically people will die because of this vote and the country who shamelessly deployed the veto." Russia has argued that the United Nations aid operation violates Syria's sovereignty and territorial integrity. It says more aid should be delivered from inside the country, raising opposition fears that food and other aid would fall under government control. The reason that the United States, Britain and France rejected Russia's proposal is that a six-month extension is seen to be not long enough for aid groups to plan and operate effectively. Previously, humanitarian aid deliveries into Syria were made from Iraq, Jordan and two points in Turkey. However, Russia and China have whittled down those entry points to just one on the Turkish border. So this is clearly not a good situation. Humanitarian aid is provided to keep people alive. Russia vetoing proposals for aid to go into the country is really not constructive and also will lead to a lot of people dying, because if that aid doesn't get through, those people have no other way of getting food. So this is really quite a serious issue. And what we're seeing here is a political agenda which is clearly being driven from what's going on in Ukraine and all of the sanctions that are being applied against Russia. It's now finding its way into issues that shouldn't have anything to do with politics. There are international laws about the provision of humanitarian aid, and the last thing that should happen here is that aid is stopped because somebody has an axe to grind. Syria is a country in the Middle East that has boundaries with Turkey, Iraq, Jordan, Lebanon, and Israel. Since gaining independence in 1946, the country has experienced instability due to friction between the country's social, religious, and political groups. Socialism became the official economic policy in 1963, and since then, the government controls the most vital sectors of the country's economy, such as the oil refineries, large electricity plants, railways, and manufacturing plants, and regulates private business. The government encourages private savings by paying higher rates of interest on deposits and by guaranteeing investment by citizens of other Arab countries. And there are severe restrictions on all luxury imports. Despite modest steps towards privatisation since 1990, the Syrian government has been largely hesitant to pursue economic liberalism, wary of its potential to endanger political stability. Natural gas was discovered in the country in 1940 and now forms a large part of the country's exports. Oil was discovered in commercial quantities in 1956 and became Syria's leading natural resource export in the 1970s. Production peaked in the mid-1990s, but has since been in decline. This chart shows the makeup of Syria's exports, and as you can see, it's still dominated by oil and gas. Despite growing revenues from oil exports, Syria's economy began to stagnate in the 1980s. Rapid population increase hindered economic growth, while the intensification of agriculture ran into natural barriers, such as the limited availability of fresh water and high cost of desalination. Industrial development was slowed by bottlenecks in production, inflation, government corruption, smuggling, foreign debts and stifling bureaucracy, and only very limited success in encouraging private sector investments also posed severe economic problems, as did spending on the military and the intervention in Lebanon. The country overcame some of the economic difficulties by obtaining aid from oil-rich states in the Middle East, and as the Soviet Union disintegrated, Syria turned to China for military supplies. In March 2011, following the Arab Spring uprisings in other countries, anti-government protests broke out in Syria. Several people were killed when security forces opened fire on protesters who were angered by the arrest of several children for writing anti-government graffiti, and protests soon spread throughout the country. The Assad regime reacted aggressively, deploying the country's powerful security services to break up rallies, often with live fire. The government cracked down on protesters and the opposition drew strong condemnation by international leaders and human rights groups. By the summer of 2011, Syria had begun to descend into international isolation. The United States and the European Union imposed sanctions that included travel bans and asset freezes. In addition, an arms embargo was applied to the entire country. The violence also strained Syria's relations with regional allies, particularly Turkey, which strenuously objected to the government's use of violence against civilians. As opposition militia grew and increased their attacks on government forces, the uprisings began to take on the character of a civil war. By late 2012, the military situation appeared to be approaching stalemate. Rebel fighters kept a firm hold on northern areas, but were held back by deficiencies in equipment, weaponry, and organization. Meanwhile, government forces weakened by defections also seemed incapable of making large gains. Daily fighting continued in contested areas, pushing the civilian death toll higher and higher. The leader of Al-Qaeda in Iraq announced his intention to combine his forces in Iraq and Syria under the name Islamic State in Iraq and the Levant, ISIL. ISIL retained considerable strength in eastern Syria, establishing a zone of exclusive control. In control of a wide swathe of territory straddling the Iraq-Syria border, ISIL proclaimed the establishment of a caliphate with al-Baghdadi as caliph in June 2014. In September 2014, ISIL turned its attention to northern Syria, attacking Kurdish towns near the Syria-Turkey border. Kurdish militia, aided by airstrikes and weapon deliveries from the International Anti-ISIL Coalition, fought fiercely to repel ISIL for several months. Over the next 2 years, the US-led campaign to destroy ISIL, which had gradually expanded to include heavier airstrikes and sizable contingents of ground troops in eastern Syria, continued to make progress. In June 2017, a mostly Kurdish force, supported by US air power and special forces, attacked ISIL's de facto capital in Syria. After about 3 months of fighting, the city was declared free of ISIL forces. The conflict has continued to remain unresolved, and after dozens of Turkish soldiers were killed in late February 2020, Turkey undertook a brief offensive against the Syrian army. The escalation ended after a ceasefire was brokered by Turkey and Syria's ally, Russia. The conflict remains unresolved, and in some areas of the country, the people of Syria are entirely dependent on humanitarian aid. So what's the summary and conclusion today? Well, I wanted to post this video because I'm trying to show what the impact of the Ukraine war is on all different parts of the economy and society. And what we're seeing here today is an example of Russia taking its political issues into a humanitarian aid environment. And I don't care which side of the fence you're on, that's really not something that anybody could support. Because the people who need humanitarian aid are living in war zones. They don't have the ability to earn enough money to buy enough food to exist. So they need that charity, they need that support until the government situation is sorted out in whatever country that they are in. And in Syria, the conflict has been going on for a very long time, more than 10 years. And it's very difficult to see how a resolution will be achieved because there's so many different fighting factions. So the humanitarian aid is really a permanent solution for these people. They need that to keep coming on a regular basis to stay alive. And the United Nations has set up a long-standing program, but it does need to be renewed every year because that's the way these things are structured. You need to have a budget, you need to have approvals, and then once it's sanctioned, everyone can then start working on the program of delivery. Russia coming to the table and suddenly deciding that they want to change the rules of the game because they're not happy with what's going on with regards to the sanctions against themselves is completely unacceptable. But unfortunately, the way that the United Nations and lots of other bodies are set up is that they have this power of veto. Everybody has to vote unanimously for things to get done. So the big question here is really whether or not the Russian membership of bodies such as the United Nations Security Council should be continuing whilst the war in Ukraine is ongoing. Because the United Nations has been set up predominantly as a peacekeeping operation to try to stop war and conflict. And when Russia is actually the aggressor in a war, they're actually starting wars at the moment. It's very difficult to take their position seriously and to look at their power of veto as still being valid. Now, it might be a completely different matter if this was just an economic discussion, if we were talking about the global economy, and Russia was trying to make its point that what's happening right now is unfair. But when we're talking about humanitarian aid, the most desperate people in the world, they need the humanitarian aid to be approved. So Russia using this as a political weapon to negotiate their situation really is something that should never, ever happen. So it will be interesting to see how the United Nations goes about solving this situation. Russia put forward a counter-proposal that they should have a six-month deal. But as it's been pointed out, 6 months really isn't long enough to set up the program because there's a lot of logistics and infrastructure needed when you're moving large amounts of food into war zones. So it really isn't acceptable to say, let's do that for 6 months and then see where we get to. 12 months is really the minimum time frame here. So it'll be interesting to see if the United Nations has a meeting and whether or not they put forward a vote to suspend Russia's membership. So I'll keep you posted as soon as there's any news or developments on this story or anything else that I think is interesting. If you've liked what I've said today, then please give me a thumbs up and don't forget to subscribe if you haven't done so already.